This is Audible.
A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away.
Penguin Random House Audio presents Rogue Squadron, Star Wars Legends. Rogue Squadron by Michael A. Stackpole. Read for you by Mark Thompson. The Essential Legends Collection. For more than 40 years, novels set in a galaxy far, far away have enriched the Star Wars experience for fans seeking to continue the adventure beyond the screen. When he created Star Wars, George Lucas built a universe that sparked the imagination and inspired others to create. He opened up that universe to be a creative space for other people to tell their own tales. This became known as the Expanded Universe, or EU, of novels, comics, video games, and more. To this day, the EU remains an inspiration for Star Wars creators and is published under the label Legends. Ideas, characters, story elements, and more from new Star Wars entertainment trace their origins back to material from the Expanded Universe. This Essential Legends collection curates some of the most treasured stories from that expansive legacy. 1.
You're good, Corrin, but you're no Luke Skywalker. Corrin Horn's cheeks still burned at the memory of Commander Antilles' evaluation of his last simulator exercise. The line had been a simple comment, not meant to be cruel, nor delivered that way. But it cut deep into Corrin. I've never tried to suggest I'm that good of a pilot.
He shook his head.
No, he just wanted it to be self-evident and easily recognized by everyone around you.
Reaching out, he flicked the starter switches for the X-Wing simulator's engines.
Green One has 4 starts and is go.
All around him in the cockpit, various switches, buttons, and monitors flashed to life.
Primary and secondary power is at full.
Oro Quirk, his Gand wingman, reported similar startup success in a high-pitched voice.
Green 2 is operational.
Green 3 and 4 checked in. Then the external screens came alive, projecting an empty starfield.
Whistler, have you finished the navigation calculations?
The green and white R2 unit seated behind Corrin hooted. Then the nav data spilled out over Corrin's main monitor. He punched a button, sending the same coordinates out to the other pilots in green flight.
Go to light speed and rendezvous on the Redemption.
As Corrin engaged the X-Wing's hyperdrive, the stars elongated themselves into white cylinders, then snapped back into pinpoints and began to revolve slowly, transforming themselves into a tunnel of white light. Corrin fought the urge to use the stick to compensate for the roll. In space, and especially hyperspace, up and down were relative. How his ship moved through hyperspace didn't really matter. As long as it remained on the course Whistler had calculated and had attained sufficient velocity before entering hyperspace, he'd arrive intact.
Flying into a black hole would actually make this run easier.
Every pilot dreaded the Redemption run. The scenario was based on an Imperial attack on evacuation ships back before the first Death Star had been destroyed. While the Redemption waited for 3 medevac shuttles and the corvette Korolev to dock and offload wounded, the Imperial frigate Warspite danced around the system and dumped out TIE fighters and added bombers to the mix to do as much damage as they could. The bombers, with a full load of missiles, could do a lot of damage. All the pilots called the Redemption scenario by another name, the Requiem scenario. The Warspite would only deploy 4 starfighters and a half dozen bombers, known in pilot slang as eyeballs and dupes, respectively. But it would do so in a pattern that made it all but impossible for the pilots to save the Korolev. The Corvette was just one big target, and the TIE bombers had no trouble unloading all their missiles into it. Stellar pinpoints elongated again as the fighter came out of hyperspace. Off to the port side, Corin saw the Redemption. Moments later, Whistler reported that the other fighters and all 3 medevac shuttles had arrived. The fighters checked in, and the first shuttle began its docking maneuver with the Redemption.
Green 1, this is Green 4.
Go ahead, 4.
By the book, or are we doing something fancy?
Corin hesitated before answering. By book, Nawara Ven had referred to the general wisdom about the scenario. It stated that one pilot should play fleet hunt and race out to engage the first TIE flight, while the other 3 fighters remained in close as backup. As long as 3 fighters stayed at home, it appeared the Warspite dropped ships off at a considerable distance from the Korolev. When they didn't, it got bolder, and the whole scenario became very bloody. The problem with going by the book was that it wasn't a very good strategy. It meant one pilot had to deal with 5 TIEs, 2 eyeballs and 3 dupes, all by himself, then turn around and engage 5 more. Even with them coming in waves, the chances of being able to succeed against those odds were slim. Doing it any other way was disastrous.
Besides, what loyal son of Corellia ever had any use for odds?
By the book. Keep the home fires burning, and pick up after me.
John, good luck.
Thanks.
Corin reached up with his right hand and pressed it against the lucky charm he wore on a chain around his neck. Though he could barely feel the coin through his gloves and the thick material of his flight suit, the familiar sensation of the metal resting against his breastbone brought a smile to his face.
It worked for you a lot, Dad. Let's hope all its luck hasn't run out yet.
He openly acknowledged that he'd been depending quite a bit on luck to see him through the difficulties of settling in with the Alliance forces. Learning the slang took some work. Moving from calling TIE starfighters eyeballs to calling interceptors squints made a certain amount of sense, but many other terms had been born of logic that escaped him. Everything about the Rebellion seemed odd in comparison to his previous life, and fitting in had not been easy.
Nor will be winning this scenario.
The Korolev materialized and moved toward the Redemption, prompting Corin to begin his final check. He'd mulled the scenario over in his mind time and time again. In previous runs, when he served as a home guard to someone else's fleet hunt, he'd had Whistler record traces on the TIE timing patterns, flight styles, and attack vectors. While different cadets flew the TIE half of the simulations, the craft dictated their performance, and a lot of their initial run sequence had been pre-programmed. A sharp squawk from Whistler alerted Corin to the Warspite's arrival.
Great. 11 clicks aft.
Pulling the stick around to the right, Corin brought the X-Wing into a wide turn. At the end of it, he punched the throttle up to full power. Hitting another switch up to the right, he locked the S-foils into attack position.
Green 1, engaging.
Rosati's voice came cool and strong through the radio.
Be all over them like drool on a hut.
I'll do my best, Green 3.
Corin smiled and waggled the X-Wing as he flew back through the Alliance formation and out toward the Warspite. Whistler announced the appearance of 3 TIE bombers with a low tone, then brought the sound up as 2 TIE fighters joined them.
Whistler, tag the bombers as targets 1, 2, and 3.
As the R2 unit complied with that order, Corin pushed shield power full to front and brought his laser targeting program up on the main monitor. With his left hand,
He adjusted the sighting calibration knob on the stick and got the two fighters. Good. Looks like three clicks between the eyeballs and the bombers. Corrin's right hand again brushed the coin beneath his flight suit. He took a deep breath, exhaled slowly, then settled his hand on the stick and let his thumb hover over the firing button. At two clicks, the heads-up display painted a yellow box around the lead TIE fighter. The box went green as the fighter's image locked into the HUD's targeting cross, and Whistler's shrill bleat filled the cockpit. Corrin's thumb hit the button, sending three bursts of laser bolts at the lead fighter. The first set missed, but the second and third blasted through the spherical cockpit. The hexagonal solar panels snapped off and spun forward through space, while the ion engines exploded into an expanding ball of incandescent gas. Corrin kicked the X-Wing up in a 90-degree snap roll and sliced through the center of the explosion. Laser fire from the second fighter lit up his forward shields, making it impossible for him to get a good visual line on the TIE. Whistler yowled, complaining about being a target. Corrin hurried a shot and knew he hit, but the TIE flashed past and continued on in at the Korolev. Time to write a new chapter for the book on the Requiem scenario. Corrin throttled back almost all the way to zero and let the X-Wing decelerate. Whistler, bring up target one. The image of the first TIE bomber filled his monitor. Corrin switched over to proton torpedo target control. The HUD changed to a larger box, and Whistler began beeping as he worked, supplying data to the targeting computer for a missile lock.
Green One, your velocity is down to 1%. Do you need help?
Negative, Green Two.
Corrin, what are you doing?
Making the book a short story, I hope.
The HUD went red, and Whistler's tone became constant. Corrin punched the button and launched the first missile.
Acquire target two.
The HUD flashed yellow, then red, and the pilot launched the second missile.
Numbers scrolled away to zero as the missiles streaked in at their targets. 2 kilometers away, the first missile hit, shredding the first TIE bomber. Seconds later, the second missile hit its target. A Nova-like explosion lit the simulator's cockpit, then melted into the blackness of space.
Acquire target three! Even as he gave the order, he knew the rate of closure between the bomber and his ship would make the last missile shot all but impossible.
Cancel three!
Corrin throttled up again as the third bomber sailed past and brought his ship around. He switched back to laser targeting and climbed right up on the bomber's stern. The dupe's pilot tried to evade him. He juked the double-hulled ship to the left, then started a long turn to the right. But Corrin was of no mind to lose him. He cut his speed, which kept the bomber in front of him, then followed it in its turn. As he leveled out again on its tail, he triggered 2 laser bursts, and the targeting computer reported hull damage. The bomber's right wing came up in a roll, and Corrin did the same thing. Had he continued to fly level, the X-Wing's lasers would have passed on either side of the bomber's fuselage, giving the bomber a few seconds more of life. Keeping the bomber centered in his crosshairs, Corrin hit twice more, and the bulky craft disintegrated before him. Pushing his throttle to full, Corrin scanned for the fighter he'd missed. He found it 2 clicks out, and going in toward the Korolev. He also found 5 more TIEs coming in from the other side of the Corvette, 18 kilometers away. Damn! The bomber took more time than I had to give it. He brought the torpedo targeting program back up and locked on to the remaining fighter. The HUD seemed to take forever before it went red and acquired a lock. Corrin fired a missile and watched it blast through the fighter, then turned his attention to the new TIEs.
Green One, do you want us to engage?
Corrin shook his head.
Negative Two. Warspite is still here and could dump another flight.
He sighed.
Move to intercept the fighters. But don't go beyond a click from the Korolev.
Burn it.
Good. They can tie the fighters up while I dust these dupes. Corrin studied the navigational data Whistler was giving him. The Korolev, the bombers, and his X-Wing formed a shrinking triangle. If he flew directly at the bombers, he would end up flying in an arc, which would take more time than he had and let them get close enough to launch their missiles at the Corvette. That would be less than useless as far as he was concerned. Whistler, plot me an intercept point. 6 clicks out from the Korolev. The R2 whistled blithely, as if that calculation was so simple even Corrin should have been able to do it in his head. Steering toward it, Corrin saw he'd have just over a minute to deal with the bombers before they were in firing range of the Korolev. Not enough time. Flicking 2 switches, Corrin redirected generator energy from recharging his shields and lasers into the engines. It took the acceleration compensator a second to cycle up, so the ship's burst of speed pushed Corrin back into the padding of his command seat. This better work.
Green One, the Warspite is hyped. Are we released to engage fighters?
Affirmative, Three. Go get them. Corrin frowned for a second, knowing his fellow pilots would make short work of the TIE fighters. They would deny him a clean sweep, but he'd willingly trade 2 TIEs for the Corvette. Commander Antilles might have gotten them all himself, but then he's got 2 Death Stars painted on the side of his X-Wing. Whistler, mark each of the bombers 4, 5, and 6. Range to intercept was 3 clicks, and he had added 30 seconds to his fighting time. Acquire 4! The targeting computer showed him to be coming in at a 45-degree angle to the flight path of his target, which meant he was way off target. He quickly punched the generator back into recharging lasers at his shields, then pulled even more energy from his quartet of INCOM 4L4 fusel thrust engines and shunted it into recharging his weapons and shields. The resource redirection brought his speed down. Corrin pulled back on the stick, easing the X-Wing into a turn that brought him head-on into the bombers. Tapping the stick to the left, he centered the targeting box on the first of the dupes. The HUD started yellow, then quickly went red. Corrin fired a missile. Acquire 5! The HUD started red, and Whistler's keen echoed through the cockpit. The Corellian fired a second missile. Acquire 6! Whistler screeched! Corrin looked down at his display. Scrolling up the screen sandwiched between the reports of missile hits on the 3 bombers, he saw a notation about Green 2. Green 2, report!
He's gone, One.
A fighter got him?
No time to chat.
The comm call from the Twi'lek in Green 4 ended in a hiss of static. Rossetti?
Got 1, Corrin, but this last one is good.
Hang on.
I'll do my best.
Whistler, acquire 6. The R2 unit hissed. The last bomber had already shot past the intercept point and was bearing in on the Korolev. The pilot had the wide-bodied craft slowly spinning, making it a difficult target for a missile lock. The Korolev, being as big as it was, would present a large enough target that even a rolling ship could get a lock on it. And once he has that lock, the Korolev is so much space junk. Corrin switched back to lasers and pushed his X-Wing forward. Even though 2 clicks separated them, he triggered a couple of laser blasts. He knew his chances of hitting were not good at that range, but the light from the bolts would shoot past the TIE and give the pilot something to think about. And I want him thinking about me, not that Nerf vet grazing there. Corrin redirected all power back into the engines and shot forward. 2 more laser blasts caused the TIE bomber to shy a bit, but it had pushed into target acquisition range. The ship's roll began to slow as the pilot fixated on his target. Then, as Corrin brought his lasers to bear, the bomber jinked and cut away to port. The Corellian's eyes narrowed. Brewer Chase has got to be flying that thing. He thinks it's payback time. The other pilot, a human from Thyfera, was, in Corrin's opinion, the 2nd best pilot in the training squadron. He's going to kill the Korolev, and I'll never hear the end of it. Unless...
Korin pulled his shield energy forward and left his aft as naked as the shieldless TIE bomber. Following Jace through a barrel roll, he kept the throttle full forward. As they leveled out again, Korin triggered a snapshot at the bomber. It caught a piece of one wing, but Jace dove beneath the X-Wing's line of fire.
Here we go.
Korin shoved his stick forward to follow the bomber's dive. But because his rate of speed was a good 20% faster than that of Jace's ship, the X-Wing moved into a broad loop. By the time Korin inverted to finish the turn off, Jace's bomber came back up and banked in on the X-Wing's tail. Before the bomber could unload a missile or two into his aft, Korin broke the fighter hard to port and carved across the bomber's line of fire.
Basic maneuver with a basic response.
Without even glancing at his instruments and paying no attention to Whistler's squealed warning, Korin cut engine power back into recharging his shields.
One more second.
Jace's response to Korin's brake had been a reverse throttle hop. By bringing the nose of the bomber up in a steep climb, then rolling out in the direction of the turn, Jace managed to stay inside the arc of the X-Wing's turn. As the bomber leveled off, it closed very quickly with the X-Wing. Too quickly for a missile lock, but not a laser shot. The TIE bomber shrieked in at the X-Wing. Collision warning klaxons wailed. Korin could feel Jace's excitement as the X-Wing loomed larger. He knew the other pilot would snap off a quick shot, then come around again, angry at having overshot the X-Wing, but happy to smoke Korin before taking the Korolev. The X-Wing pilot hit a switch and shifted all shield power to the aft shields. The deflector shield materialized as a demisphere approximately 20 meters behind the X-Wing. Designed to dissipate both energy and kinetic weapons, it had no trouble protecting the fighter from the bomber's twin laser blasts. Had the bomber used missiles, the shields could even have handled all the damage they could do, though that would have been enough to destroy the shields themselves. The TIE bomber, which massed far more than the missiles it carried, should have punched through the shields and might even have destroyed the fighter, but it hit at an angle and glanced off. The collision did blast away half the power of the aft shield and bounced the X-Wing around, but otherwise left the snub fighter undamaged. The same could not be said of the unshielded bomber. The impact with the shield was roughly equivalent to a vehicle hitting a ferrocrete wall at 60 kilometers per hour. While that might not do a land vehicle much damage, land vehicles are decidedly less delicate than starfighters. The starboard wing crumpled inward, wrapping itself around the bomber's cockpit. Both pods of the ship twisted out of alignment, so the engines shot it off into an uncontrolled tumble through the simulator's data space.
Green 3, did you copy that?
Korin got no response.
Whistler, what happened to 3?
The R2 unit gave him a mournful tone.
Sith spawn.
Korin flipped the shield control to equalize things fore and aft.
Where is he?
The image of a lone TIE fighter making a strafing run on the Korolev appeared on Korin's monitor. The clumsy little craft skittered along over the Corvette's surface, easily dodging its weak return fire.
That's seriously gutsy for a TIE fighter.
Korin smiled.
Or arrogant. And time to make him pay for that arrogance.
The Corellian brought his proton torpedo targeting program up and locked on to the TIE. It tried to break the lock, but turbo laser fire from the Korolev boxed it in.
Korin's HUD went red, and he triggered the torpedo. Scratch one eyeball.
The missile shot straight in at the fighter, but the pilot broke hard to port and away, causing the missile to overshoot the target.
Nice flying.
Korin brought his X-Wing over and started down to loop in behind the TIE. But as he did so,
the tie vanished from his forward screen and reappeared in his aft arc. Yanking the stick hard to the right and pulling it back, Corrin wrestled the X-Wing up and to starboard, then inverted and rolled out to the left. A laser shot jolted a tremor through the simulator's couch. Lucky thing I had all shields aft. Corrin reinforced them with energy from his lasers, then evened them out fore and aft. Jinking the fighter right and left, he avoided laser shots coming in from behind, but they all came in far closer than he liked. He knew Jace had been the bomber, and Jace was the only pilot in the unit who could have stayed with him. Except for our leader. Corrin smiled broadly. Coming to see how good I really am, Commander Antilles? Let me give you a clinic. Make sure you're in there solid, Whistler, because we're going for a little ride. Corrin refused to let the R2's moan slow him down. A snap roll brought the X-Wing up on its port wing. Pulling back on the stick, yanked the fighter's nose up away from the original line of flight. The tie stayed with him, then tightened up on the arc to close distance. Corrin then rolled another 90 degrees and continued the turn into a dive. Throttling back, Corrin hung in the dive for 3 seconds, then hauled back hard on the stick and cruised up into the TIE fighter's aft. The X-Wing's laser fire missed wide to the right as the TIE cut to the left. Corrin kicked his speed up to full and broke with the TIE. He let the X-Wing rise above the plane of the brake, then put the fighter through a twisting roll that ate up enough time to bring him again into the TIE's rear. The TIE snapped to the right, and Corrin looped out left. He watched the tracking display as the distance between them grew to be a kilometer and a half, then slowed. Fine. You want to go nose to nose? I've got shields and you don't. If Commander Antilles wanted to commit virtual suicide, Corrin was happy to oblige him. He tugged the stick back to his sternum and rolled out in an inversion loop. Coming at you! The two starfighters closed swiftly. Corrin centered his foe in the crosshairs and waited for a dead shot. Without shields, the TIE fighter would die with one burst, and Corrin wanted the kill to be clean. His HUD flicked green as the TIE juked in and out of the center, then locked green as they closed. The TIE started firing at maximum range and scored hits. At that distance, the lasers did no real damage against the shields, prompting Corrin to wonder why Wedge was wasting the energy. Then, as the HUD's green colors started to flicker, realization dawned. The bright bursts on the shields are a distraction to my targeting. I better kill him now. Corrin tightened down on the trigger button, sending red laser needles stabbing out at the closing TIE fighter. He couldn't tell if he had hit anything. Lights flashed in the cockpit, and Whistler started screeching furiously. Corrin's main monitor went black. His shields were down, and his weapons controls were dead. The pilot looked left and right. Where is he, Whistler? The monitor in front of him flickered to life, and a diagnostic report began to scroll by. Blood red bordered the damage reports. Scanners out, lasers out, shields out, engine out! I'm a wallowing hut just hanging here in space! With the X-Wing scanners being dead, the R2 droid couldn't locate the TIE fighter if it was outside the droid's scanner range. Whistler informed Corrin of this with an anxious bleat. Easy, Whistler. Get me my shields back first! Hurry! Corrin continued to look around for the TIE fighter. Letting me stew, are you, sir? You'll finish the Korolev, then come for me. The pilot frowned and felt a cold chill run down his spine. You're right. I'm no Luke Skywalker. I'm glad you think I'm not bad, but I want to be the best. Suddenly, the starfield went black, and the simulator pod hissed as it cracked open. The canopy lifted up, and the sound of laughter filled the cockpit. Corrin almost flicked the blast shield down on his helmet to prevent his three friends from seeing his embarrassed blush. Nope.
Might as well take my punishment.
He stood and doffed his helmet, then shook his head.
At least it's over.
The Twi'lek, Nawara Venn, clapped his hands.
Such modesty, Corrin.
Huh?
The blonde woman next to the Twi'lek beamed up at him.
You won the redemption scenario. What?
The gray-green Gand nodded his head and placed his helmet on the nose of Corrin's simulator.
You had 9 kills. Jace is not pleased.
Thanks for the good news, Oral. But I still got killed in there.
Corrin hopped out of the simulator.
The pilot who got you 3, Commander Antilles, he got me too.
The Twi'lek shrugged.
He's been at this a bit longer than I have, so it's not a surprise he got me.
Rosati shook her head, letting her golden hair drape down over her shoulders.
The surprise was that he took so long to get us, really. Are you certain he killed you?
Corrin frowned.
I don't think I got a mission end message.
Clearly you have too little experience of dying in these simulators, because you'd know if you did.
Rosati laughed lightly.
He may have hit you, Corrin, but he didn't kill you. You survived and won.
Corrin blinked, then smiled.
And I got Broar before he got the Korolev. I'll take that.
As well you should.
A brown-haired man with crystal blue eyes shouldered his way between Oral and Nawara.
You're an exceptionally good pilot.
Thank you, sir.
The man offered Corrin his hand.
Thought I had you, but when you shot out my engines, your missile caught up with me. Nice job.
Corrin shook the man's hand hesitantly. The man wore a black flight suit with no name or rank insignia on it, though it did have Hoth, Endor, and Bakura battle tabs sewn on the left sleeve.
You know, you're one hot hand in a tie.
Nice of you to say, Mr. Horn. I'm a bit rusty, but I really enjoyed this run.
He released Corrin's hand. Next time, I'll give you more of a fight. A woman wearing a lieutenant's uniform touched the TIE pilot on the arm.
Admiral Akbar is ready to see you now, sir. If you will follow me.
The TIE pilot nodded to the 4 X-Wing pilots.
Good flying, all of you. Congratulations on winning the scenario.
Corrin stared at the man's retreating back.
I thought Commander Antilles was in that TIE. I mean, it had to be someone as good as him to get you 3.
The ends of Nawara Venn's headtails twitched.
Apparently he is that good.
Rosati nodded.
He flew circles around me.
At least you saw him.
The Gand drummed his trio of fingers against the hull of Corrin's simulator.
He caught Oral as Oral fixed on his wingman. Oral is free hydrogen in sim space. That man is very good.
Sure, but who is he?
Corrin frowned.
He's not Luke Skywalker, obviously. But he was with Rogue Squadron at Bakura and survived Endor.
The Twi'lek's red eyes sparked.
The Endor tab had a black dot in the middle. He survived the Death Star run.
Rosati looped her right arm around Corrin's neck and brought her fist up gently under his chin.
What difference does it make who he is?
Riss, he shot up 3 of our best pilots and had me dead in space and says he's a bit rusty? I want to know who he is because he's decidedly dangerous.
He is that. But today he's not the most dangerous pilot. That's you.
She linked her other arm through Nawara's right elbow.
So, Corrin, you forget you were a security officer. And, Nawara, you forget you were a lawyer. And let this thing drop. Today we're all pilots. We're all on the same side.
She smiled sweetly.
And the man who beat the redemption scenario is about to make good on all those dinner and drink promises he made to talk his wingmates into helping him win.
2. Wedge Antilles saluted Admiral Akbar and held the salute until the Mon Calamari returned it. Thank you for seeing me, sir.
It's always my pleasure to see you, Commander Antilles.
Without moving his head, Akbar glanced with one eye toward the other man standing in his office.
General Salm and I were just discussing the impact of having Rogue Squadron back in the fleet. He feels you are all but ready to go. The unit roster is impressive.
The brown-haired fighter pilot nodded.
Yes, sir. I wanted to speak to you about the roster, if I could, sir.
Wedge saw Salm's face close up.
There have been changes made to the roster without my consultation.
Salm turned away from the floating blue globe hanging in the corner and clasped his hands behind his back.
There are circumstances beyond your control that made those changes necessary, Commander Antilles.
I'm aware of that, sir. Lieutenants Hobby Clavien and Wes Jansen will do well bringing new training squadrons along. I didn't want to lose them, but that was a battle I lost a long time ago. And I understand why half the slots in my squadron are going to political appointees.
Akbar's head came up.
But you do not approve?
Wedge bit back a sharp comment.
Admiral, I've spent a good deal of the 2.5 years since the Emperor died, touring worlds new to the Alliance because someone decided our new allies needed to see we had heroes, that we weren't all the bandits the Empire made us out to be. I gave speeches, I kissed babies, I had holograms taken with more world leaders than I ever knew existed. I was there as our propaganda machine built Rogue Squadron up into the needle that exploded the Emperor's Death Star balloons.
The human general in command of the Rebellion's Starfighter Training Center at Folor smiled coolly.
Then you do understand why it is important that our allies have representatives within our most celebrated squadron.
Yes, but I know the difference between a real fighter squadron and the monster you've made Rogue Squadron out to be. The Empire isn't going to lie down and die just because they see a dozen ships jump into a system.
Of course not.
But General, that's what our diplomatic corps is suggesting. The Bothans want a pilot in Rogue Squadron because they found the second Death Star and we killed it. And I understand why having 2 Thyferans is important. We have to appease the 2 conglomerates that control back to production.
Akbar held up a webbed hand.
Commander, a question to the point is this. Are the pilots selected inferior to other candidates?
No, sir, but...
But?
Wedge took a deep breath and let it out slowly. Luke would be telling me that anger isn't good. He's right, because anger won't get me any closer to what I want. Admiral, I'm commanding a fire squadron. We're an elite squadron, and the only thing I want to change about it is our survival rate. You've let me have the pick of the new pilots coming over to us, and I've got a fine group of them. With some more training, I think I can make them into the sort of unit that will strike terror into Imperial hearts. And,
he added, nodding at General Salm,
I concur with the selection of all the pilots listed on the roster you have, except for 2. Rogue 5, and my executive officer.
Lieutenant Deegan is an excellent pilot.
Agreed, General. But he's from Corellia, the same as me and Corrin Horn. It strikes me that having Corellia overrepresented in Rogue Squadron is not politically wise.
One of Akbar's eyes shifted slightly.
You have someone in mind to replace him?
Wedge nodded.
I'd like to use Gavin Darklighter.
Salm shook his head adamantly.
He's just a Tatooine farm boy who thinks the ability to shoot womp rats from a speeder can make him a hero.
Begging your pardon, sir, but Luke Skywalker was just a Tatooine farm boy whose ability to shoot womp rats from a speeder did make him a hero.
The general snarled at Wedge's riposte.
You can't mean to suggest this Darklighter has Commander Skywalker's control of the Force.
I don't know about that, sir. But I do know Gavin has every bit as much heart as Luke does.
Wedge turned toward the Mon Calamari.
Gavin had a cousin, Biggs, who was with Luke and me in the trench at Yavin. He stayed with Luke when I was ordered to pull out. Biggs died there. Gavin came to me and asked to join my squadron.
What Commander Antilles is not telling you, Admiral, is that Gavin Darklighter is only 16 years old. He's a child.
You couldn't tell it by looking at him.
Akbar's barabels quivered.
Forgive me, gentlemen, but determining a human's age by visual clues is a skill that has long since eluded me. General Salm's point is well taken, however. This Darklighter is rather young.
Is the Admiral suggesting that someone somewhere within the Alliance won't take Gavin in when we need to put someone in an X-Wing cockpit? I don't think Commander Varth would balk at bringing Gavin on board.
That may be true, Commander Antilles. But then Commander Varth is far more successful at keeping his pilots alive than you are.
Akbar's even tone kept the remark away from being a stinging rebuke, but not by much.
And yes, I know Commander Varth has never had to face a Death Star.
Rogue Squadron's leader frowned.
Sir, Gavin came to me because Biggs and I were friends. I feel an obligation to him. Even General Salm will agree that Gavin's test scores are very good. He'll do his redemption scenario in 3 days. And I expect his scores there will measure up. I want to pair Gavin with the Shistavanin, Sheel. I think they'll work well together.
He opened his hands.
Gavin's all alone, and looking for a new home. Let me put him in Rogue Squadron.
Akbar looked at Salm.
Aside from this nebulous age problem, you do not disagree with this selection?
Salm looked at Wedge and bowed his head.
In this case, if Darklighter does well on his redemption trial, I see no problem with letting Commander Antilles have his way.
Which means my choice for XO gets opposed fully. Not that I expected less. You are most kind, General.
Akbar's mouth opened in the Mon Calamari imitation of a smile.
Spoken with General Solo's degree of sarcasm, I believe.
I'm sorry, sir.
Wedge smiled, then clasped his hands at the small of his back.
I would also hope the General would see his way clear to letting me choose my own executive officer.
The Admiral looked at his starfighter commander.
Who is presently in that position?
Rogue Squadron's XO is Captain Errol Numb. She is sister of Nine Numb, one of the other heroes of Endor. She is every bit as skilled a pilot as her brother, and worked extensively with him during his smuggling days. Sullust is providing us aid, and having her in Rogue Squadron would definitely increase support from the Sora sub-government.
Commander, do you quarrel with this assessment?
Wedge shook his head.
No, sir, not at all.
Then the problem is...
She's a wonderful pilot, Admiral, and I'd love to have her in my squadron, but not as my XO. In that position, I need someone who can help train my pilots. What Errol does, what her brother does, is intuitive to them. They can't teach it to others. As my XO, she'd be frustrated. My pilots would be frustrated, and I'd have chaos to deal with.
And you have another candidate in mind?
Yes, sir.
Wedge looked at General Salm and braced for his reaction.
I want Tycho Selchu.
Absolutely not!
The explosion Wedge had expected from Salm did not disappoint him.
Admiral Akbar, under no circumstances will I allow Selchu to be anywhere near an active duty squadron. Just because he isn't in prison is no reason for me to want him in my command.
Prison? Wedge's jaw shot open. The man hasn't done anything that warrants confinement.
He cannot be trusted.
I believe he can.
Come on, Antilles. You know what he's been through.
What I know, General, is this. Tycho Selchu is a hero. Much more of a hero than I am. On Hoth, he fought as fiercely as anyone. And at Endor, he piloted an A-wing that led a bunch of TIE fighters on a merry chase through the Death Star. He took them off our backs while Lando and I went in and blew the installation's reactor. He fought at Bakura and went on subsequent missions with the squadron. Then volunteered, General, volunteered to fly a captured TIE fighter on a covert mission to Coruscant. He got captured. He escaped. That's it.
That's all you want to see, Antilles.
Meaning?
You say he escaped.
Salm's face hardened into a steel mask.
It could be they let him go.
Sure. Just like they let him go at Endor.
Wedge grimaced, doing his best to banish the anger he felt growing in him.
General, you're fighting ghosts.
Salm nodded curtly.
You're right. I'm fighting to prevent you and your people from becoming ghosts.
Well, so am I. And having Tycho with us to train my people will give them the best chance of survival possible.
Salm tossed his hands up in disgust and looked at Admiral Ackbar.
You see? He won't listen to reason. He knows Captain Selchu is a threat, but he won't let himself see it.
I'll listen to reason, sir, when I see the product of some reasoning.
Ackbar held up his hands.
Gentlemen, please. Commander Antilles, you must admit that General Salm's concerns are valid. Perhaps if there were a way to alleviate some of them, an accommodation could be reached.
I thought of that, sir, and I've spoken with Captain Selchu about it.
Wedge started ticking points off on his fingers.
Tycho has agreed to fly a Z-95 headhunter in our training exercises, with the lasers powered down, so they can only paint a target, not hurt it. He's agreed to have a destruct device installed in the starfighter, so that if he goes to ram anything or goes outside space lanes to which he is assigned, he can be destroyed by remote. When not flying, he has agreed to remain under house arrest unless accompanied by Alliance security or members of the squadron. He's agreed to undergo interrogation as needed, to have all his computer files and correspondence open to examination, and is even willing to have us choose what he eats, when, and where.
Salm marched over and placed himself between Wedge and the Mon Calamari Admiral.
This is all well and good, and might even be effective, but we can't afford the risk.
Ackbar blinked his eyes slowly.
Captain Selchu has agreed to these conditions.
Wedge nodded. He's no different from you, Admiral. He's a warrior. What he knows, what he can teach, will keep pilots alive. Of course, there's no way General Salm will ever let him fly in combat again.
That can be etched in transparasteel.
So serving as an instructor is the only way he can fight back. You have to give him this chance.
Ackbar activated the small comlink clipped to his uniform's collar.
Lieutenant Fela, please find Captain Selchu and bring him to me.
The Mon Calamari looked up at Wedge.
Where is he currently?
Wedge looked down at the deck.
He should be in the simulator complex.
He's where?
Salm's face went purple.
You'll find him in the simulator complex, Lieutenant. Bring him here immediately.
Ackbar turned the comlink off.
The simulator complex?
It was Horn's turn leading the redemption scenario. Tycho knows how to fly a TIE better than most pilots, so I decided to have him fly against Horn.
Ackbar's lip fringe twitched.
You've taken certain liberties concerning Captain Seltzer already, it seems, Commander.
Yes, sir. But nothing that isn't necessary to make my pilots the best. I'm being prudent in this, I think.
The most prudent course, Commander, if you cared to protect the rest of the trainees here, not just your own, would have been to keep Captain Seltzer out of the simulator facility entirely.
Salm crossed his arms over his chest.
You may be a hero of the New Republic, but that doesn't give you any authorization to jeopardize our security.
Perhaps having Tycho fly today was a bit premature.
Wedge glanced down penitently.
I stand corrected, sir.
Akbar broke the uneasy silence following Wedge's admission.
What is done is done. Now, using Captain Seltzer in the scenario would have made it that much more difficult, would it not?
A smile creeping back on his face, Wedge nodded.
Yes, sir. Which is what I wanted. Horn is good, very good, and the trio of pilots flying on his side in the exercise are not bad either. Overall, Horn or Broer Jace, the Thyferin, are the best pilots in the whole group. Jace is arrogant, which gets under Horn's skin and keeps him working hard. Horn, on the other hand, is impatient. That'll get him killed. And the only way to make that apparent to him is by having someone shoot him up in exercises. Tycho can do that.
The door to Akbar's office opened, and a female rebel officer led a pilot in a black flight suit into the room.
Admiral, this is Captain Seltzer.
Tycho snapped to attention.
Reporting is ordered, sir.
At ease, Mr. Seltzer.
Wedge gave the slightly taller man a reassuring smile. The Admiral eased himself out of his chair.
You may leave us, Lieutenant.
The Mon Calamari waited for the door to close behind his aide. Then he nodded toward Wedge.
Captain Seltzer, Commander Antilles has told me that you have agreed to a remarkable number of restrictions on yourself and your activities. Is this true?
Tycho nodded.
Yes, sir. It is.
You realize you will be flying a defenseless bomb. You will have no privacy and no freedom.
I do, sir.
The Mon Calamari closed his mouth for a moment and stared silently at the blue-eyed pilot.
You will be treated no better than I was when I served as a slave to Grand Moff Tarkin. You will be treated worse, in fact, because General Salm here believes you are a threat to the New Republic. Why do you agree to such treatment?
Tycho shrugged.
It's my duty, sir. I chose to join the rebellion. I willingly froze on Hoth. I followed orders and assaulted a Death Star. I volunteered for the mission that got me in all this trouble. I did all those things because that's what I agreed to do when I joined the rebels.
He glanced down.
Besides, even the worst you can do to me will still be better than Imperial captivity.
Sweat gleaming from his bald head, Salm pointed at Tycho.
This is all noble, Admiral. But would we expect anything less from someone in his position?
No, General. Nor would we expect anything less of a noble son of Alderaan.
The Mon Calamari picked up a datapad from his desk.
I am signing orders to make Captain Seltzer the executive officer for Rogue Squadron, and to put this Gavin Darklighter in the squadron as well.
Wedge saw Salm's expression sour, so he suppressed his own smile. Even so, he winked at Tycho.
Two flights, two kills.
Akbar glanced at the datapad screen, then looked up again.
Commander Antilles, I expect to be informed about any irregularities or problems with your unit or personnel. An M3PO military protocol droid has been assigned to your office to help you make out reports. Use it.
The Corellian rolled his eyes.
As you wish, sir. But I think that droid could be more useful elsewhere.
I'm sure you do, Commander. But those decisions are made by those of us who haven't refused promotions time and time again.
Wedge held his hands up.
Yes, sir.
I surrender. But you don't fool me, Admiral. You like mixing it up in battle the same as I do. But you work with the big ships, while I like the fast ones.
Good. I am glad we understand each other.
Akbar nodded toward the door.
You're dismissed, the both of you. I imagine you have things to celebrate.
Yes, sir.
One last thing.
Wedge looked up, and Tycho turned around to face the Admiral.
Sir?
They asked in tandem.
What did you think about the pilots in the redemption scenario?
Wedge looked over at his XO.
Did you get Horn?
Tycho blushed.
Oh, I got Horn, but just not as much of him as I would have liked.
Smiling proudly, he added,
Admiral, if the pilots I flew against are representative of the rest of the people we have to work with, Rogue Squadron should be operational within a couple of months, and the Scourge of the Empire not very much longer after that.
3. Kirtan Lore struggled to keep a self-satisfied smirk from ruining the stern expression he had worked hard to cultivate. He wanted to appear implacable. He needed to be merciless. He feared he would fail on both counts, but laid the blame on his eagerness to confront an old nemesis finally brought to heel. What had been a blot on his record would soon be expunged. More importantly, people who had ridiculed him would learn they had grossly underestimated him. And in doing so, they had doomed themselves. Kirtan held his head erect as he marched down the companionway on the Expeditious. The Carrick-class light cruiser had not been built to accommodate people of his height, so he felt some of his black hair brush against the ceiling. A more cautious man would have slumped his shoulders slightly and lessened the chance of bashing his head on a light fixture or bulkhead support. Kirtan, having once been told that he looked every inch a taller, younger Grand Moff Tarkin, from thinning widow's peak and lanky frame to sharp features and a cadaverously slender face, did his best to emphasize the resemblance. Even though Tarkin was nearly 7 years dead, the resemblance still earned him some respect. On an Imperial naval vessel, respect for an intelligence officer such as himself was in short supply, so he took what he could get. The military arm of the Empire clearly resented having the government being run by the Emperor's former intelligence chief, and they took their displeasure out on the least of her servants. Kirtan ducked his head and entered the antechamber of the Expeditious's brig.
I am here to interview the prisoner you took off the Starwind.
The lieutenant in charge glanced at his datapad.
He just got back from medical.
I know. I've seen the report.
Kirtan glanced at the hatchway leading to the detention cells.
He has been told nothing about the results?
The soldier's face darkened.
I've been told nothing about the results. If he has a disease, I want him out before he infects the...
The intelligence operative held a hand up.
Calm yourself. You'll bounce your rank cylinder out of your pocket in a moment.
The lieutenant raised a hand to check his rank badges, and when he found them in place, he blushed.
Play your little games with rebel scum, not me. I have serious work to do.
Of course you do, Lieutenant.
Kirtan flashed a smile that was more predator than comrade, then turned toward the detention cells.
Which one?
Holding cell 3. Wait here while I get you an escort.
I won't need one.
You may not think so, but he's listed as rating a 4 on the hostility index. That rating requires 2 officers to accompany an interrogator.
Kirtan shook his head slowly. I know. I gave him that rating. I can handle him.
Remember that when you're in a Bactobath, washing away his fingerprints.
That I shall, Lieutenant. Kirtan grasped his hands at the small of his back and started off through the hexagonal companionway. His black boots made a solid clanking sound on the metal grating, and he measured his steps carefully to keep the sound rhythmic and daunting. The hatch to cell 3 opened with a hiss of pressurized gas. Yellow light spilled out into the corridor, and Kirtan folded himself halfway to double to fit through the opening. He paused inside the cell and stood tall. He narrowed his eyes, then immediately thought better of it. He always said it looked as if I were wincing in pain. The older, heavy-set man swung his legs around off the cot and leveled himself up into a sitting position.
Kirtan Lore. I thought it would be you.
Did you? Kirtan interjected sarcasm into his voice to cover his own surprise. How could that be? The old man shrugged his shoulders.
Actually, I rather counted on it.
What? The intelligence officer snorted. You mean you thought no one but me would be able to puzzle out your whereabouts?
No. I mean that I thought even you could figure out how to find me.
Kirtan rocked back slightly from the venom in the prisoner's voice, bumping the back of his head on the top of the hatchway. This is not the way this is supposed to be going. Narrowing his eyes, he stared down at the old man. You, Gil Bostra, are going to die.
I figured that the moment your ties started shooting at me.
Kirtan slowly crossed his arms. No, you don't understand how desperate is your situation here. You thought you outsmarted me in the Empire. You were cautious, but not insurmountably so. You are dying even now. Bostra's bushy gray eyebrows met in a frown.
What are you talking about?
When we took the Starwind, I ordered a medical evaluation for you. You may have forgotten that I always remember what I have seen and heard. And in doing so, you have forgotten how you ridiculed me for using scotopanol to interrogate a smuggler working for the Rebellion. You told me then that he died during interrogation because his boss, Billy, had his people dose themselves with loteramine. It metabolizes the interrogation drug and can induce chemical amnesia, or, in some cases, death. Kirtan gave Bastra a cold smile. Your medical scan shows elevated levels of loteramine in your blood.
I guess you'll just have to kill me the old-fashioned way, then.
Bastra smiled openly, flashing white teeth in a thick, stubble-coated face.
Since Vader was the last Jedi, I guess you'll even have to get your hands dirty doing it.
Hardly.
You never were one to break a sweat doing any work on Corellia, were you, Lore?
Bastra slumped back against the bulkhead.
I don't think you would have fit in even if you'd made an effort. You were always your own worst enemy.
I wasn't meant to fit in. You were Corellian security. I was Imperial Intelligence attached to your office. Kirtan forced himself to calm down a bit and unknotted his fists, lowering his hands to his sides. He tugged on the hem of his black tunic. And now, you are your own worst enemy. You have accelerated blastonecrosis.
What? You're lying.
No. No, I'm not. Kirtan let pity slip into his voice. The lotiramine is very effective in masking the tracer enzymes for the disease. Here on this ship, our medical facilities are far superior to those you would find among rebels. We were able to pick out the enzymes.
Gil Bastra's shoulders slumped, and his gray head bowed. His hands came together around his bulging stomach.
The fatigue. Loss of appetite. I thought I was just getting old.
You are. And you are dying.
The intelligence officer idly stroked his sharp chin with a long-fingered hand.
I can do nothing about the former problem, but there are ways to cure blastonecrosis.
And all I have to do to be cured is turn in my friends.
Looking down upon the gray lump of a man across from him, Kirtan felt momentarily embarrassed by memories of having feared Gil Bastra's judgment of him and his work. Bastra had not been his direct supervisor, but he had been the one to assign officers to work with intelligence, and Bastra's lack of respect had been reflected through the personnel sent to work with Kirtan. Every time that Kirtan had felt in control and superior, Bastra had managed to undercut him and shame him.
Is this another of those times?
Kirtan caught himself and nodded slowly.
There is more fight in you than you would want me to believe there is. I know you fashioned the new identities for your confederates, and did a very good job of it, too. In fact, you only made mistakes in your own cover. Still, I knew that you'd find yourself a freighter and hop around the galaxy as your heart pleased. You were too old to change your lifestyle to something totally alien to avoid detection. You decided to gamble, and now you have lost.
The old man's head came up slowly. Kirtan saw fire still smoldering in the blue eyes.
I'll give you nothing.
Yes, yes, of course you won't.
The intelligence man laughed lightly.
You forget. I learned interrogation from a number of very good people, including yourself. I will get information from you. When I do, and you know I will, Corin Horn, Ayella Wasiri, and her husband will be mine. It is inevitable.
You're overestimating your abilities and underestimating mine.
Am I? I think not. I know you well enough to know you'll only break under extreme pressure. I can and will take you to the edge of your endurance, then float you in Bacta until you are ready to continue interrogation.
Kirtan folded his hands together.
However, you are just one relay in the network that will bring the others to me. Corin Horn is too volatile to stay confined in any role you create for him. And I know that role had to be very constricting for him.
Bastra's chest heaved mightily with a sigh.
And how do you know that?
Kirtan tapped his temple with a finger.
You think I have forgotten the falling out the two of you had? You decided to protect him because his father had been your partner when you started out. But you are a vengeful man, Gil Bastra. Whatever role you created for Corin would squeeze him every day, just to remind him he owed his life to a man he hated.
Fat rippled beneath the prisoner's gray jumpsuit as he laughed.
You do know me.
I do indeed.
But not well enough.
Bastra gave him a grin that was all teeth and defiance.
I am vengeful. Vengeful enough to engineer things so a disgraced intelligence officer would spend the rest of his career dashing around the galaxy trying to capture three people he once worked with. Three people who escaped out from under his hooked beak and were able to do so because his nose was so up in the air all the time that he couldn't notice the most obvious of mistakes they made.
Kirtan used scorn to smother his surprise.
I caught you, didn't I?
And it took you the better part of 2 years to do so. Ever wonder why? Ever wonder why, when you were about to give up, a new clue would surface?
Bastra surged forward and stood. Though the prisoner was nearly 30 centimeters shorter than Kirtan, the intelligence officer felt somehow dwarfed by him.
I wanted you following me. Every second you were on my trail, every moment I looked easier to catch than the others, I knew you'd come after me. And while you were coming after me, you wouldn't be going after the others.
Kirtan pointed a trembling finger at the old man's face.
That doesn't matter, because you can and will be broken. I will have from you the things I need to find the others.
You're wrong, Kirtan. I'm a black hole that's sucking your career down into its heart.
Bastra sagged back down under the cot.
Remember that when I'm dead. Because I'll be laughing about it for all eternity.
This cannot continue. I will not be humiliated any longer.
I'll remember your words, Gil-Bastra. But your laughter will be a long time coming.
The only eternity you'll know is your interrogation. And I guarantee, personally guarantee, you'll go to your grave, having betrayed those who trusted you the most.
4. Corin